I'm pulling out my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work. Okay. So, last time I started a podcast on Scourge, the dragon set. So Scourge was the third set in the Onslaught block following Onslaught and Legions. So I talked about last time, it was pitched as the dragon set. Didn't have a lot of dragon stuff in it, a little bit. We'll talk more about that today. So we were up to see, so we're up to Chill Haunting. So Chill Haunting is an instant that costs one and a black, so two mana total. So as an additional cost to play it, you had to exile X creature cards from your graveyard, and then the spell that target creature got -X/-X till end of turn. So essentially what it let you do is it allowed you for pretty cheap, for two mana, to kill things, but you needed to use creature cards in your graveyard as a resource. And the idea is, this was a creature-centered block. You had a lot of creatures. Legions was all creatures. And the idea was, oh, in a block deck, hey, you probably should have a lot of creatures. So, you know, that should work out just fine. It's a fun card that definitely makes use of resources a little different. I enjoy... One of the things that's fun for me is finding different ways to make use of different resources. And the graveyard is an interesting one. It's one of those things that we always use a little bit, and every once in a while we focus on. It wasn't the focus of this block, but I do think that the spell worked well in this environment. Next, Clutch of Undeath, 3BB enchant creature. Remember, enchantment aura back then was enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +3/+3 if it's a zombie, -3/-3 if it's not. So we've been doing, this is an early version of this kind of mechanic where it's an aura that has one use in a certain way and a different use in another way. So the idea here is if you're playing a zombie deck, you can use it to build up your zombies and make them stronger. If you want to use it on your opponent, even if you're playing zombies, but if you want to use it on your opponent and they don't have zombies, you can use it to kill. And so it's a versatile card, especially in the zombie deck where you have the options of beefing up your zombies or killing other things. You know, the fact that this spell is a kill spell when you need it to be, but also creature boosts, it just gives you a lot of versatility. The key to making this kind of card design-wise is to make sure that they feel like companion pieces. And there's a strong desire to make sure that the effect of the A effect and the B effect feel connected. Because they feel disconnected. It's like, enchanted creature, if it's a zombie, gains, you know, regeneration. But if it's not, it gains flying. And it's like, what? Why is it? You know, it doesn't make sense. But this thing's like, +3/+3, if this, -3/-3, if not. And that seems very connected. So the key whenever you're doing a spell, this is a good just note in general on design, is that whenever a spell does more than one thing, you want those things to feel connected, like they belong on the same card for a reason. If you have a card in which you have two abilities that have no sort of connection to each other, it makes the card feel disconnected. Now, there's different ways to make them feel connected. This particular one is an aesthetic thing where you're using the similar numbers. There's a lot of different ways to make them feel connected. But it is very, very important that your different components do feel connected. Okay. Next. Consumptive Goo. Ooh, another ooze. BB for a 1/1 ooze. So it costs 2 black mana for a 1/1 ooze. And then for 2 black, 4 mana, target creature gets -1/-1 to end of turn, and put a +1/+1 counter on Consumptive Goo. So one of the cards that I joke that we keep making is the Blob, which is, it's ooze, it just eats things. If you'll notice, a lot of the oozes historically get bigger over time, because one of the, vampires hunt at night. What do oozes do? They eat things and grow. That's kind of what oozes do. Sometimes they're acidic, I guess. Sometimes they destroy things. But they destroy things and they get bigger. It's kind of their thing. So Consumptive Goo is definitely playing in that space. That essentially you can go around and start, eating other things. And the thing that's cute is early in the game you can eat small things. And as you get more mana, it starts eating bigger and bigger things. Daru Warchief. Two white for a 1/1 soldier. Soldiers you control cost one less, and soldiers you cast cost one less. Soldiers you control are +1/+2. So remember, the War Chief was a cycle. All of them, it was a 5-card cycle. All of them made whatever creature type they cared about one less, and they were always of their own creature type, allowing you to play future War Chiefs cheaper. And then they granted an ability that made sense for that group. Not all of them were power toughness bonuses. I think, in fact, maybe only white was a power toughness bonus. The idea was each one wanted to play to their play style, and white is all about building the army, and soldiers are about having lots of small soldiers. So this definitely plays into the soldier deck, where you want to get a lot of small soldiers up, and then the war chief sort of makes them stronger as a group. You know, plus one, plus two to your team is good if you have a lot of small creatures, which is what white does. Okay, next. Dawn Elemental. White, 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 white. Yes, that is four white mana. For a 3/3 elemental, it is flying, and it has prevent all damage to card name. So we make these kind of cards every once in a while. Essentially, it's like, it's a decently costed body that's really hard for your opponent to deal with. Now, note this only prevents damage. You still can tear it, you know, murder it, whatever destroy effects you want. But it really, in some ways, is designed to be hard for red to kill. It doesn't say protection from red on it, but really this is sort of a white anti-red card, because red mostly deals all its kill spells are all damage-based. So when it prevents damage, it's really hard for red to deal with this thing. In general, red does not have a lot of flyers either, so this is made as a white card that's meant to be extra hard for red to deal with. Like I said, black can deal with this thing. Black's got a ton of kill spells, most of which kill this thing. But red has a problem with it. Next, Day of the Dragons. So Day of the Dragons costs four blue, so seven mana total, three of which were blue. It's an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you exile all of your creatures and then replace them with 5/5 red dragon tokens. And then, if this ever leaves play, you have to sacrifice all your dragons, whether or not they're tokens, by the way, and then you return all the creatures. This was a real cute thing. I like a lot the idea of you're turning all your things to dragons. It has a little bit of the wonkiness of, if you have other dragons somehow, and this dies, it kills those dragons in addition to the tokens. It's in blue, so blue doesn't have a lot of dragons. The other thing is, if you lose dragons along the way, let's say I turn my creatures into dragons, and my opponent kills some of the dragons, when this enchantment leaves play, I get all my creatures back. So there's a little bit of flavor disconnected. I turn myself into dragons, you kill some of the dragons, but then they come back, even though the thing they've been turned into was killed. But it was just too wordy to word it any other way. I think that's why it went that way. And I think the reason it had the rider is they wanted you to have an answer to it. Like, all my creatures are now 5/5 dragons. How do I deal with that? Like, well, you can deal with enchantment and turn small back with the flavor. This is definitely one of the things. Maybe this is one of the things that got people, when they looked at this thing, going, oh, maybe we can make this a dragon set. In that, this is a good example of a card that's in blue. Blue is not normally the dragon color, but has a card that makes sense thematically in blue that ties to dragons. Note, by the way, the dragons are still red tokens, that the set wasn't trying to underlie the iconicness of red as a dragon creature. Sometimes, like, one of the things we do with dragons from time to time, historically, is every once in a while, so when you do surveys of creature types, when we ask our players what they like, the number one most popular creature type is dragons, by actually a decent margin. People love dragons. And so every once in a while, we did Mirage, we did Invasion, we did it in Kamigawa. We've done it a few times. Plane Chase. Plane of Chaos. Where we'll do a cycle of dragons. We don't normally do that for the other iconics. Like, for example, when we did the Angel set and had a cycle of angels, there still was white, you know, it was white and blue and white and red and white and green, but white was always there. So one of the things about dragons is every once in a while, when we think it's worthy, we'll cycle out dragons, just because they're so popular, and the people like the dragons. I don't know why I'm doing the Italian accent. Okay, next, Decree of Annihilation. Okay, Mark talks about what he doesn't like about some of the cycling design. Okay, so Decree of Annihilation is 8RR, so 8 red, so 10 mana total for sorcery. Exile all artifacts, creatures, lands, graveyards, and hands. I find it very bizarre, by the way, that this says, I guess it's red. So red doesn't destroy enchantments. So it destroys everything but enchantments. Also, it doesn't destroy planeswalkers because at the time they didn't exist, so it didn't name them. But notice now it does destroy all the permanents other than enchantments. It destroys all graveyard cards and all cards in hand. which for red is not something red traditionally does. Then for cycle 5 red for 7 mana, as opposed to 10 mana, you can cycle it, and if you cycle it, you destroy all the lands. A small version of the effect. So here's my problem. One of my problems in general with cycling is there is this desire when you design to try to prove what you can do, to say, look how clever I'm being. And one of the things when you be clever is there are ways to take mechanics and bend them and make them act like other mechanics. And this is a good example of this is taking cycling and turning into a split card. Because the idea of cycling is, I mean, the original concept of cycling is I have a card, and if at any moment I'd rather have something other than that card, I can trade it in for a different card. You know, that cycling allowed you to say, oh, I don't need this right now, I can trade it in for a random card. And then we started this thing, this block, where like we started doing small effects, and at first it was just tiny effects, and now you get to stuff like Degree of Annihilation, where it's like, okay, so I have a spell that for 7 mana is an uncounterable, because when you cycle you can't be countered, an uncounterable red Armageddon with a cantrip. You know, it's like uncounterable red Armageddon with a cantrip. And, like, that is so much more powerful than, I mean, 10 mana to destroy everything. I mean, sometimes you do that, but what's much more powerful? This 7 mana uncounterable cantrip Armageddon. And, like, that's not the point of cycling. Like, one of the things that's important is the goal of Magic, from Magic Design, is that we are constantly making new sets. And that we want the sets to feel fresh and new. But the game is the game. A lot of what we do is try to make sure the game consistently plays the same. That we don't want to feel like it's such a radically different game. Like, what game am I playing? You know, we want enough departure that it feels different and that you're excited. You know, we want to make sure that each new Magic set is playing differently so that there's, you know, there's variety. But look, we want it to be Magic. We don't want you to play a set and go, wow, that doesn't even feel like Magic. We don't want that. And part of doing that is having mechanics to help define things and give you a different feel. In order to do that, though, we need to make sure that we understand what mechanics are doing and have those mechanics do that thing. There is not a lot of value of having mechanics have lots of different functions, because all it really does is it makes it harder for other sets to have a consistent sense and flavor. You know, the second that cycling just becomes split cards, well then, cycling and split cards aren't different things. And that is wrong. Like, I want cycling to be cycling and split cards to be split cards, and I want them to do their own thing. And, you know, I'm not a big fan. Like, I want cycling to be what cycling is, which is a way to trade in cards. I don't want it to be a way to do alternate spells. Let alone, you know, uncounterable cantrips, which it has to be to still be cycling. So anyway, my little rant on Decree of Annihilation. This whole cycle had this problem where just the small cycling was so big, such a big effect, that it wasn't like I'm trading away this for a small effect. Some of the kind, you know, like when I'm spending 7 mana in Armageddoning and drawing a card, that's not a small effect. That's a pretty big effect. And that moves away from cycling. So Decree of Justice, I'll talk about one more decree. This is another real popular one. So XX2WW. So 2 X's, a 2 colorless mana, and 2 white mana. So 2, 2, and 2. It's a sorcery. Put X4/4 white angel tokens with flying into play. And you could cycle it for 2W, and if you cycled it, you paid X, and then you put 1X11 white soldiers into play. So the idea of this card is you either could put X11s or X angels. Angels, obviously, there was more mana than just the X. This is another card where, oh, cycling 2W. It's not cycling 2W. It's cycling X2W. Just it was too awkward to put X in the activation cost. So, like, once again, that's not a minor spell. You know, that literally is a spell where I can spend all my mana on the cycling cost. That's not a tiny spell. I will note, by the way, a little thing about the decrees is, if you look in the art of the decrees, Corona False God shows up. Sometimes, like in Decree of Justice, you see her silhouette, like on the rock. But she either is in the art or her silhouette's in the art of all 5 decrees. Because apparently Corona likes decreeing things. Next, Dimensional Breach. So Dimensional Breach is a sorcery that costs 5 white-white, so 7 mana total. You exile all permanents, and then beginning of each player's turn, he or she returns a card he owns to their hand. So the idea is you remove everything, and then little by little people get it back. The problem with a card like this is there are ways for white to remove its own stuff, and so it's not horribly hard if you remove it with this thing and then sack it. I don't think that there's a rider that brings them all back if this thing is sacrificed. So you can remove everything and then get rid of this, and then nobody gets anything back. It is designed, though, by the way, because it's beginning of turn, that your opponent gets the first thing back before you get the first thing back. So that was definitely it trying to balance. Okay, Dispersal Shield was an instant for one and a blue, so two mana. Counter target spell unless X is paid, where X is the highest converted mana cost of a permanent you control. So this is another one of the cycle of the CMC cycles where it looks for permanents you control, takes the highest one. In general, I don't want to talk too much about the converted mana cost. So there's a couple problems. Number one is, like I said, I explained what converted mana cost was in the last podcast because I'm like, not everybody knows. And a lot of times people think, like, once they understand something, that everybody understands something. But converted mana cost confuses people. Part of it is the words don't do the best job. We have looked for other words to say converted mana cost with and have not had a lot of success. So the only reason we haven't changed it is we haven't found anything that's any better. But people don't know what it is. I tend to avoid at common saying converted mana cost because I know it's confusing. Every once in a while we do it, but I tend to avoid it. Having it be a major thing in a set where people sort of have to get it, this theme did not go over all that well for a couple reasons. One was you kind of have to play big things before it really does something that makes you excited. So by definition, it just never happens early. There's moments where cool things can happen, but it is most often disappointing. You know, this card costs two mana, so at two mana, you're like, ooh, I can cast this card, and like, oh, you know. Now, this one, luckily, you don't need a very high converted mana cost to sometimes do what you need to do. Often, just having, you know, your opponent having to pay three is enough to stop the spell. So this particular card was a little better than most, but the CMC theme was not particularly well-received. People did like the storm mechanic because it was very powerful. They liked the land cycling. So there's a lot of mechanical stuff they liked, but the actual CMC theme was not particularly well received. Dragon Fangs. Dragon Fangs is a cycle. So this particular one is one and a green, two mana for an enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and trample. And then, if a creature with converted mana cost 6 or greater enters the battlefield, this is in your graveyard, it snaps onto that creature. So the idea of this whole cycle was, I play it, I can play it early. If the thing I play it on dies, well, sometime later, I will play a big thing, and if I play a big thing, I get this thing back. They were flavored as dragon stuff, dragon things, such, because the development team was trying to make it feel more dragon-y. And the idea is, well, what if we took the things that cared about big things and just named them and flavored them as if they were dragon things? Because dragons are big. Dragons tend to cost 6 mana or more, although not all of them do, but most of them do. I think all the ones in the set do. It's another good example where I always talk about if your theme's not a common, it's not your theme. One of the things that's always challenging is when you have a theme like dragons, which you don't tend to do a lot of common dragons. Common dragons are tricky. And so you have to find a way to point toward it. I mean, I get what they were doing here. I mean, I do like that they took something that had a function in the set and used it as a means to point toward the theme. I can appreciate that. I mean, I like it. I don't think these particular auras were all that useful. They weren't particularly that strong. And the fact that it's like when I get my dragon in play, okay, now it's a little bit bigger, but trample doesn't matter all that much. Usually there's not that many things blocking it. And, I mean, +1/+1 is nice. Maybe it changes the clock slightly, but like, oh, I have a 7/7 instead of a 6/6. It's not as a big a deal. I mean, I guess you could have built a deck with a whole bunch of these, maybe, so when you finally get a dragon out, it's just the craziest thing in the world. But once again, once you get a dragon out, you're usually in good shape, so we have effects we call the Rich Get Richer, which are they're effects in which you do something that tends to say, hey, have you done something that's probably already winning you the game? Well, it even more win you the game. You know, and so a little of that's okay. You got to be careful, though, because they don't a lot of the times you got to make sure that if you're behind, you have tools to catch back up. Being ahead and staying ahead, you know, the Magic's not fun if every time you're ahead, you just make it easy for them to stay ahead. Okay, next. Dragon Mage. I'm going to take a sip of water here to give her my hiccups. Ah, okay. Dragon Mage. 5 red for a 5/5 Dragon Wizard. So he costs 6 or more. He has flying. And whenever he deals combat damage to the opponent, each player discards their hand and draws 7 cards. So can you name that effect? Yes, it hits you and it Wheels of Fortune. So Wheel of Fortune is a card from Alpha that did that exact effect. Cost 2 and a red, I believe. It was really, really good. It's one of actually the most broken of the red cards from Alpha. We go back and forth. One of the problems we have in red is red is supposed to not be very good at card advantage. It tends to be one of the anti-card advantage colors that throws all its resources quickly to try to win quickly, but there's more trouble if the opponent can survive. And so if you give red too much card drawing, it fills in a weakness that's kind of crucial to how the color functions. So we like him a little bit. We definitely do some tutoring, but the stuff we tend to do where red gets more cards, it's not a card advantage. So, for example, red tutoring, you discard before you draw. So the problem with Wheel of Fortune is it's just card advantage, especially if you have an empty hand. And one of the reasons it was so powerful in early Magic is because red really, really likes that effect. So what we did is we tried to do Winds of Change, where the idea is I get a new hand, but I'm not getting any more than the cards I had. There's a big debate right now of when we do Winds of Change, where we're supposed to put it. My big issue is that if you make 2 effective Winds of Change in red, it allows red to not have to solve some problem by going to other colors. One of the things you want is you want every color to have weaknesses that can be strengthened by going to a second color. And that I want to be careful we don't make cards that fill in the gaps of what's supposed to be a color's weakness. Next, Dragon Tyrant. 8 red, so 10 mana for a 6/6 dragon. Flying, trample, double strike, and fire breathing. So you pay red mana to get +1/+0 end of turn. And it's got an upkeep cost of red. So 4 red. The idea here was just a big, bad, mean dragon. This is back where we were still doing upkeep costs. That's not something we do all that often. I mean, once in a blue moon we do. It used to be very very popular in Magic. Early Alpha, for example, has a lot of upkeep costs. And the idea was it allowed you to get things out a little cheaper, but there was a mana cost required to keep them. And in general, what we found is players weren't particularly fond of them. Oftentimes, players were excited to draw their card, and so they'd draw their card because they had nothing to do, but they forgot their upkeep, and once you draw a card, you haven't paid your upkeep costs, and then it would die, and just a lot of unfun. So we dialed it back. It's not something we never do, but we do very infrequently these days. And I think Dragon Tyrant is just designed to be, like, if you can get a dragon out, because there's a bunch of ways in the set to get dragons out, this thing is just big and mean. Okay, Dragon Speaker Shaman. So 1 RR, so 3 mana for a 2/2 Barbarian. No, this is before the mirrored in the next block would be the race class. So this does, it has a class but no race. Anyway, dragon spells you cast cost 2 less. So there's a cycle of war chiefs that make everything cost 1 less. And this is kind of an unofficial war chief extended card, except because it's dragons and dragons are more expensive, this makes them cost 2 less. Okay, Dragon Stalker. So Dragon Stalker is for 4 and a white, 5 mana, it's a 3/3 bird soldier. It is flying and protection from dragons. So I think what's going on in this card is... Sorry, it's the hiccup episode. What's going on in this card is... I believe the protection from dragons came in development because they were trying to find some ways to take the cards that were there and up the amount of dragoness. And so I think this was a way to sort of add a little bit of trinket text to a card. Okay, there were a couple of dragons in the set. It could matter. But it was more to just give a little flavor. Okay, speaking of, now we're in the D's, we got a lot of dragon cards. Dragon Storm! So 8R, so 9 mana total, sorcery. Search your library for a dragon card and put onto the battlefield. Storm! So what this thing was is, if you could cast, if you could, for every spell you manage to get before casting this, you get a dragon. So the best way you tend to do this is using rituals, because the nice thing about rituals is rituals help you get more mana, so they help get you to the point where you can cast a 9-mana spell, and then they get you extra dragons in the meantime. The biggest problem with this is having a 9-cost storm spell, which says for every spell you cast, before you cast this 9-cost spell, hey, you get an extra thing, you know. And really, it's what ended up being true was it was you casting spells to even get to 9 mana. And rituals, one of the things that ended up being really, really powerful with Storm was rituals, because rituals not only are spells that get cast, but actively get you to the point where you can cast these spells, and they allow you to cast other spells. Storm really wants lots of mana, and so the fact that you have mana that gets to count as a spell for the Storm count proved to be really valuable. For those that aren't aware, back in Alpha, mana rituals, meaning I cast a spell and get mana just for that turn, Dark Ritual being the poster child, started in black. There's a lot of flavor to them in black, but eventually when we sort of rejiggered the color pie to make sure that all the colors, you know, were sort of more even in what they did, we realized that it made more sense for red, thematically, to be the color that was getting short-term advantage, and so we moved rituals to red. What we found over time, and Storm did not help with this problem, is rituals are just dangerous. Mana is kind of the safety valve of the game, and so when you make cards that let you get around the safety valve, it causes problems. So we still do rituals, but we're careful with them. They are very dangerous. Getting mana can one of the ways most easiest break the game is just give people access to mana so that the safeguard of mana isn't the thing that's protecting you. Next, Edgewalker. Walks the edge. 1 white-black, so 3 mana for a 2/2 cleric, and he makes cleric spells cost white-black less. But he only reduces color cost. So, clearly there's a little theme going on. The War Chief's reduced by 1, Dragon Speaker Shaman reduces by 2. This card, interestingly, reduces by 2, but specifically by 1 white and 1 black. So what that means is, for most clerics, which are either mono-white or mono-black, it reduces them by 1, and only the colored cost. But if you haven't played any white-black clerics, and there's some, Edgewalker's one of the examples, it allows you to play it much cheaper. So, for example, if you play an Edgewalker, the second Edgewalker costs only 1 mana. Okay, Elvish Aberration. So it's 5 and a green for a 4/5 elf mutant, tap add GGG, so 3 green mana, and 4 cycling 2. So I often talk about code names, you know, card names, that when we make cards, we tend to give them, sometimes we're serious names, sometimes they're goofy names. One of the real common names I tend to give is whenever there's a creature that's like, you know, 3/3 or bigger and it taps for mana, I always call it Fat Elf. And this is the epitome of a Fat Elf. 4/5 taps for 3 green. The idea here was there were a lot of big spells, so the idea is at 6 mana, if you can get this out, this can help you get out like 9 mana stuff. But because it itself is expensive, it has 4 cycling on it. So, you know, when you're able to get it, you can use this to get from mid range to high range for your spells, but early in the game, you can just trade it in for a forest. So let's talk about the mutant thing a little bit. So one of the themes that was going on is because Brian wanted converted mana cost to matter, this set just had a preponderance of large things. And so the creative team had to go, why are there so many large things? We need to explain that. And so I think it was Corona or something about the nature of what was going on, probably it was in the Mirari. The Mirari was also at play here. The Mirari was causing things to just grow crazy, and it was making mutants out of everything, and everything was getting weird. So there were elf mutants and goblin mutants. Normally elves are not 4/5. That's like if you ever build an elf deck and you're looking for a bigger elf, this is an interesting one because it is an elf, even though it's a 4/5 creature. And that was justified by just making everything mutants. And the reason why was because it was a tribal set, they needed to make sure they had some elf stuff in addition to beast stuff. And they didn't want all the big stuff just being beasts. So that's why you get some things like elf mutants and goblin mutants and such. Okay, next, Eternal Dragon. So Eternal Dragon costs 5 white-white, so 7 mana, for a 5/5 dragon spirit. It had flying. For 3 white-white, 5 mana, you could return it from your graveyard to your hand during your upkeep, and it had plane cycling too. So this was the most powerful of all the land cycling cards, and the reason is because when you get this in your opening hand, what should you do? Plane cycle it! There's no reason not to, because it has a means by which you can get it back later. And so, and not only that, sometimes if you're at 5 mana and you're not yet at 7 mana, you might even plane cycle multiple times to get you there. You know, because once you get up to 5 mana, you can use this to get you the extra mana you need to get up to 7 mana to be able to cast the Eternal Dragon. This is also one of the best dragons historically that wasn't a red dragon. There was a lot of debate at the time. The creative team was not happy there was a white dragon. You know, every once in a while we have cycles, and I think the creative team is much happier when there's a cycle of dragons than there's just one single, you know, signs pointing to, hey, look at me, I'm a white dragon. And it was a very, very good white dragon, too. Like, not only was it was played in tournaments, you know, it was just a really good dragon. And when we're iconically trying to make dragons red, you got to be careful where you stick it. And I the creative team wasn't super happy that this was kind of just random one really powerful white dragon. But the players liked it. Although, whenever I talk about the color pie, normally when we break color pie, I was like, cool, I don't get to do that normally. That's exciting. Okay, so thank you for joining my special hiccup episode of Drive to Work. So we got to E, but I'm now at work, and so we'll have to pick up with F tomorrow. Hope you guys are enjoying our little jaunt through Scourge. Brian and Worth, that's the design team. Also, I learned, by the way, that they got a little bit of help from Bill Rose. He's not credited, but Bill actually helped on the team a little bit. But anyway, I'm glad that they made a fun set, and so as we tiptoe through it, we can see all sorts of cool cards and talk about what was going on. But as you guys maybe can tell, or maybe you can't, I don't know when I put my brake on, if you can hear me put my brake on. But anyway, I'm now parked in my parking space, or a parking space. I don't have my own parking space. I'm now parked in my parking space, a parking space. See, I did it twice. I'm now parked in a parking space, and you know what that means. It means it's time to end my drive to work, and it's time for me to be making magic. So thanks for joining me, and I'll talk to you next time when we're going to talk more Scourge.